industrial agriculture. And I don't want people to feel overwhelmed by these problems. On the contrary, the reason I write about them, none of them were inevitable. Things don't have to be the way they are. In my own lifetime, I've seen enormous change for the better. When I was at college, there were just a handful of gay people who were out of the closet, and they were getting beaten up by the football players. So we have gay marriage now. When I was born, we had legal segregation. We have an African-American president now. And even in these bigger international realms, you know, when I was born, it was quite conceivable there'd be an all-out nuclear war with the Soviet Union. But in my lifetime, I've seen the Berlin Wall come down, Germany reunited, Soviet Union vanished from the face of the earth, huge cutbacks in the number of nuclear weapons. But these things don't happen. They don't just happen. People have to make them happen. So I don't want readers or listeners to just feel this is an oppressive problem. These are solvable problems. And right now, the President of the United States really wants to address it. So I hope people will, you know, take that to heart and feel energized rather than overwhelmed.
Eric Schlosser, I really want to thank you for coming in and talking about this today. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
And again, I have been speaking with journalist and author Eric Schlosser. We are talking about his latest book. It's called Command and Control, subtitle Nuclear Weapons, the Damascus Accident, and the Illusion of Safety. This is Kathleen Stevenson for KBOO Public Affairs.
We'll meet again.
You're listening to Political Perspectives on KBOO Portland. Up next, we'll hear activist and author Madia Benjamin speaking on what must the movement against drones do to succeed. Madia Benjamin is co-founder of the groups Code Pink and Global Exchange. She is the author of 8 books, including Drone Warfare, Killing by Remote Control. She is a tireless anti-war and social justice activist. She spoke at the Midwest protest and conference to oppose drone warfare and surveillance. That was held in Chicago in September. Here is Madia Benjamin.
Glad that the previous speakers, one, talked about the local campaign, because, Kate, it's so important to have a local campaign, and that Joe put it in the global context, because we have to look at drones within that global context. And I am amazed in the last couple of weeks what has happened in changing the global context, because the American people have risen up and said we don't want more war. And that's quite extraordinary for the American people. And it puts us in a whole different context right now. And as part of that context, I held my nose and I went to a meeting the other day that was organized none other than by the Koch brothers. It was the Charles Koch Institute. And I thought, all right, you know, we made some strange bedfellows when we worked against a U.S. invasion in Syria. When I was doing the work around this, I would be in the offices of some of these congresspeople, and you'd hear the strangest phone calls coming in, because you heard the receptionist on the other end saying, okay, I will register your opposition to a U.S. invasion of Syria, and yes, I will tell the congressman you don't want to fund Obamacare. And, and the Tea Party was having mobilizations in the congressional West Lawn at the same time we were taking over the streets in front of Congress to say no to war in Syria. And they would come over from the Tea Party and say, can we have our pictures taken with Code Pink? Because we never thought we would agree with you on anything. So... when I went to this Koch brothers thing, I thought, all right, you know, I'm just going to test out the waters here, because we were partners, strange partners against the Syria thing. And I talked to one of the people and I said, do you think maybe we should have a meeting with you to talk about drones? And he said, I'm not sure about the drones thing because, you know, we were against Syria because we didn't want to spend more money on wars, and these drones are pretty cheap. And we don't like U.S. soldiers getting killed, and they don't get killed when you have drones. And so, you know, maybe we could talk about it, but it's not an easy argument with our people. And I thought, you know, we've really got to work on these issues. So part of it is in my book, and I encourage you to get a copy and read it, but we've got to convince people that, one, this is not a cheap way to wage war. First of all, the drones are very expensive. Actually, when you see that a third of them crash, so you have to keep buying more of them, which is built-in obsolescence by the industry. They want you to keep buying more. And instead of getting cheaper, they get more expensive because they have fancier equipment and they're made not to crash as much. And you see something like the Global Hawk that is a $200 million drone, and that crashed in Maryland when they were testing it. So, and then this issue of the U.S. Troops not being killed. Well, they might not be killed in the air, but if you keep these wards going, they're going to be killed in other places, like they're being killed in Afghanistan, like they're attacking U.S. embassies, and like making it harder for us to travel around the world because we're afraid of telling people we're American. And a lot cheaper is peace. And I think that's what the American people are really saying they want right now. And when we talk about the alternatives, let us not allow them to tell us the alternatives are drones. The alternatives are better policing against people who are trying to blow up civilians. The alternatives are really reducing the U.S. footprint, military footprint around the world, so that we are not a target of attack. We will be hated around the world as long as we have over 800 military bases in other people's territories. We will be hated around the world as long as we are trying to be euphemistically called the world's policeman, but more and more people are understanding it's the world's George Zimmerman. And so as we I'm going to quickly go through some slides here for those of you who haven't seen what some of the results of our drone warfare is. When we are told that we are killing high-level al-Qaeda people, that might be 2% of the people we're killing by the drones. We don't know how many people have been killed by drones. I say probably about 5,000, not counting people who have been killed by drones in Afghanistan. And only 2% of them are people who have been on the high-value target list. Now, you kill number three in al-Qaeda, what's going to happen? Number four becomes number three. In general, though, the majority of people who are being killed are low-level al-Qaeda, low-level Taliban, and innocent people. We're using the drones. We use them quite a lot in Iraq, still using them in Afghanistan, Libya, Pakistan, Yemen, Somalia, Philippines. But look below this at all of the places where drone bases are being put up. These are new bases, and we should be very concerned about them not only being throughout the Middle East and Northern Africa, but starting in the Pacific as well. The use of drones in Afghanistan has been going up while the war there is supposed to be winding down. But in other places where we are using these drones, like in Pakistan, the number of drone strikes is going down. Now, part of this is what they call the whack-a-mole policy. You hit them in Pakistan and they go to Yemen, so you start hitting them in Yemen and then they go to Mali. But the other part is the attention that we've been putting on this issue. And so in Pakistan and Yemen, drone strikes have been going down. They have been trying to be more careful about the number of civilians killed, but there are still drone strikes and still civilians being killed and still plans to use these drones in other places. In the case, I'll go quickly through this, and again, these are things that I talk about a lot in the book. Photographer who says that when he tries to take pictures of drone victims, most of the time they are vaporized. There's no remains except pieces of flesh lying around on the ground or in trees. He takes pictures of the people who were hit by the shrapnel from the drones. We have a list of 178 children killed by drones. You never see these on the mainstream media, but if you did, I think Americans would be a little more sympathetic to the people in places like Pakistan. This is a man, Karim Khan, who we're trying to bring to the United States for the drone summit November 16th and 17th to tell his story, because he speaks English, and he's one of the few people from the tribal areas who do speak English and could be able to tell about how the drone hit his family home, killed his son and his brother. When Pat introduced me, she talked about how I interrupted Obama's speech, and I felt compelled to do it because he said that the U.S. policy was to capture people, and drones were used as a last resort. And I always think of this young man, 16-year-old, from the tribal regions of Pakistan, who was at a public meeting for an entire week discussing how they could stop the drone strikes that were terrorizing his village. And 2 days later, these are the remains of that young man. And he could have been easily captured. And, of course, to think that a 16-year-old was somehow a high-level al-Qaeda member who is out to kill Americans is absurd. But Tariq Aziz is just one of the hundreds of people who could easily have been captured if there was reason to think they were out to kill Americans and instead were just killed. It's also important to understand when you talk about drones, it's not just the number of people killed or injured by them. It's the terrorizing of entire populations. This I added into the new version of my book because it's such an important component to say how it's terrorizing children, women, young people who are afraid to go to schools because schools have been hit, women who are afraid to go to the marketplace because markets have been hit, afraid to go to weddings, funerals, any community kinds of gatherings because they hear the drones overhead. They hear the buzzing. They see the drones. They never know when it's going to hit and who is going to be killed. People tell us in your war against terror, you are terrorizing entire populations. The response from the Pakistani people have been tremendous. The vast majority of Pakistanis against the drones. They don't like al-Qaeda, they don't like the Taliban, and they don't like drone strikes. And it was very interesting. Nawaz Sharif just spoke before the UN, and he said in his speech that they consider drone strikes illegal and want drone strikes in their nation to stop. The other place where drones are being used frequently is in Yemen. And in the case of Yemen, it's interesting because the president of Yemen was put in place after the Arab Spring there took down the dictator, but he was the vice president. So he's put in there as an interim placeholder while the Yemenis are figuring out the next phase of their transition government. Well, he was just in the United States meeting with President Obama. He has been in favor of drone strikes, and yet the National Dialogue Conference, which is 485 people elected by all walks of society in Yemen and have been meeting to figure out the transition, voted overwhelmingly to say that drone strikes were illegal and they did not want drone strikes in their country. So there is one person in Yemen who is calling for drone strikes, and the people who represent the vast majority and have been elected to represent the vast majority are against drone strikes. This is a man who I think has a voice that's very important to listen to, and we are trying to get him a visa to the United States for the drone summit as well, because he is part of a large tribe that is very angry. His brother was killed in a drone strike. He was a taxi driver, picked up some unknown people that the U.S. perhaps thought were al-Qaeda. Maybe they were, but blew up the taxi. And he came with his brother's children, who will never know their father again, and with pieces of the drone to show that these were American Hellfire missiles. But if you look at this man's face, and I'll just go back for you to look at it, you see sorrow and you see anger. And he said that in his society, if you do something wrong, you have to atone for it. You have to acknowledge what you did. You have to apologize for what you did. And you have to provide compensation. That the U.S. has done none of this. And he says, could it be that his tribal culture is more evolved than the U.S. government when it comes to justice? Great. This is a young man you might have seen when he testified before Congress and said that in his village, anybody would have known if there was a high-level al-Qaeda person there. In fact, somebody should have told them if there was a suspect. They would have brought him in. And in his small village, there was a drone attack, he said, that did something in an instant what the extremists could never do, which is turn the entire village against the United States. And this happens every time there is a drone strike. And this woman that you see in the picture is a story that we were told in Yemen. And she didn't say, my brothers were in the wrong place at the wrong time. She said, my brothers were fighting against a dictatorship in this country. And as part of looking around and seeing who were fighting against a dictatorship, she said her brothers joined al-Qaeda, three of them. And she said, this would be the equivalent in the United States of young people who joined a gang. And I tried to convince my brothers that they got in with the wrong group, that this was not a good way to fight the government, and that instead of getting rehabilitation, instead of getting some kind of way to reincorporate them into society, the U.S. just blew them up with the drone strike. She said, my brothers had no problem with the United States, didn't know the United States at all, and why should the U.S. come in into an internal conflict and turn it into an international conflict? And that is a lot of what's happening with the drones. And so when you hear militants were killed, even if they were militants, even if they were people who had joined al-Qaeda, you have to wonder, why did they join al-Qaeda? Was it something local that they were fighting? And do we want to be going around killing 17, 18, 19-year-olds, which is the majority of people who we are killing, and think that if this has to do with 9/11, these people were 10 years old when 9/11 happened? So one thing I think when we talk to people that we want to bring into this larger tent of drones being bad for humanity is to say that the U.S. is not the only country that has drones. In fact, our companies are selling drones all over the world, but the largest exporter of drones is Israel. And Israel brags in its marketing materials how it is constantly upgrading and battle testing the drones. And of course, this is on the Palestinian people as well as on other people in the region, because they have used them in Lebanon as well. And then the third country that is a major producer of drones and exporter now is China. China quickly catching up with the technology. In fact, through their cyber warfare, are getting the plans for U.S. drones and are using the U.S. Company's technology to produce their own drones. So what we are fighting here is a drone lobby that is extremely powerful, that has its own congressional caucus that's made up mostly of Republicans but also Democrats, especially Democrats who have large manufacturers in their districts. And they are so powerful that they are changing the export rules so that the U.S. can sell these drones to known human rights abusers around the world. And they are changing the rules so that the U.S. companies can sell these drones here at home. Well, when we're talking to people who are from the Tea Party or friends of the Koch brothers or your own relatives, one of the things we really have to talk about is how the drones are coming to be used against us here at home. And in fact, that man that I showed you from Yemen, whose brother had been killed, he said something profound. He said, we feel like we are guinea pigs here, that you are testing out this technology on us. And he said to us that when you go home and talk to people about it, tell them what I said, because if you're not worried about killing poor people in countries like Yemen, you should be worried about what's going to happen when the technology is turned on you. And that is, I think, a very profound statement that we should talk to people about, because what is happening is already that the Federal Aviation Administration has been forced by Congress to open up our airspace by September 2015, and that in the meantime have been given out hundreds of permits to both companies, government entities, universities, and police departments to start the experimental use of drones. We should be concerned, for example, the first one on here at the FBI, you might have heard last week that they came out with a report saying the FBI had used $3 to $5 million on drones, and they are giving money to police departments to be using drones. Border Patrol, as we heard from our friend yesterday, they are increasing the number of drones that are used both in the southern and the northern border. And I should have put Boeing on here in the companies because it certainly is one of the major companies that is involved in drone warfare, and it's important that we focus on these companies. Universities, it's great that student groups are now looking at their ties to the production of lethal weapons with the military grants that their engineering departments are getting and trying to break those contracts. And then the police departments. There are 18,000 police departments here in the United States. If it was up to the drone manufacturers, every single one of them would have them. And who do you think would be spied on with these drones? Raise your hand if you think you might be one of the ones spied on with these drones. I know, Joe, you will be one of the ones spied on with these drones. So there are a lot of people in our country who do value their privacy, and even if they don't care about killing poor people of color in other countries around the world, they might not like the drones being used to spy on them. They don't like the NSA revelations that, thanks to Edward Snowden, we know about, and drones would up that to another level of 24/7 kind of surveillance society. So, just to conclude, I think it's very exciting that Evanston, Illinois, is one of the places that has passed a no-drone resolution. And I know that as part of the workshops, we're going to be discussing how to spread that to other places around here. It's also quite extraordinary that 41 states in this country are either discussing or passing some kind of resolution trying to curb the use of drones before the September 2015 deadline comes to be. And that is thanks to the work of groups like the Electronic Frontier Foundation, groups like the ACLU doing extraordinary work. Now, they're not as strong as we might like them. They certainly don't say don't use drones at all, but they say that if you're going to use them, there should be a search warrant. If you're going to use them, there should be some probable cause, or there should be a moratorium until we can figure out how to use these drones. There is a national bill that we should be supporting, introduced by a right-wing Republican from Texas named Congressman Poe, along with a progressive from California, Zoe Lofgren, that says not only must there be a court order, but it also says that drones will not be armed here in the United States. So we should support that national legislation. What are some of the things that we could possibly get out of Congress? Well, the best that we could get is potentially something that says drones should be out of the hands of the CIA. We should outlaw signature strikes, which are the strikes that allow the CIA to kill on the basis only of suspicious behavior, and that leads to a lot of innocent people being killed, and potentially a compensation fund for innocent people who have been killed by these drones. I think it's very important we get some champions in Congress, and some of us have been talking about getting Congressman Keith Ellison, who feels bad about his betrayal of the progressive community with his support for an invasion in Syria and might be predisposed right now to help us on this issue. And there are some positive things happening at the UN level. There is a campaign to try to stop killer robots. These are autonomous weapons that have not been deployed yet, but a good international campaign in place to stop them before they could be used. And there is a report coming out October 25th in the UN that will look at the use of U.S., NATO, and Israeli use of drones to see have war crimes been committed. So we are anxious for that to report to come out. And then finally, I invite you all to join us at the Drone Summit. This is Washington, D.C. It is not too far from you. November 16th and 17th, the day before, we will be protesting at the headquarters of drone manufacturers as well as outside of the White House. The day afterwards, we'll be in the Congress protesting at the offices of Congress. People have been supporting this drone caucus. And during those 2 days, we will have people from Afghanistan, Yemen, Pakistan. We will have some of the best international experts on international law in the entire world. We will have former drone operators who have decided they can't continue to do that work. And so it's really going to be an extraordinary time to come together. And we hope that out of that drone summit will be a reinvigorated and stronger and more effective network in the United States, but globally as well, because we will have people coming from not only the countries that have been victims of the drone attacks, but also from the European countries that are getting and arming their own drones. So I hope that some of you will join us. And if not, if you can't come, at least make sure that your group is sending a representative there. So thank you very much for having me and for the work you're doing. I look forward to the workshops and to seeing the Midwest as really a model for the entire country as how we can stop the drone wars. Thank you.
That was Medea Benjamin, co-founder of Code Pink and Global Exchange, the author of 8 books, including Drone Warfare. She spoke at the Midwest Protest and Conference to Oppose Drone Warfare and Surveillance. That was held in Chicago in September. This is KBOO Portland. It's 10 o'clock. Stay tuned for Air Cascadia with Chris Andre.
Of you, and I forget to do the little ordinary things that everyone ought to do. I'm living in a kind of daydream. I'm happy as a queen, and foolish though it may seem. Everything, the mere idea of you, the longing here for you. You'll never know how slow the moments go till I'm near to you. I see your face in every flower, your eyes and stars above. It's just the thought of you, the very thought of you, my